Am I allowed to make one political announcement here? I haven't made one in a while. I haven't mentioned the name of Donald Trump lately. So I'm going to say this now. I'm just going to get it over with real quickly here because I'm going to make a spiritual point. Of course, it's going to be a good point. And there was a line from the inauguration that I thought was brilliant, and it should be brilliant in spite of your political leanings, I think. Trump said this. I'm going to kind of paraphrase him, but this is pretty close. Still a paraphrase. This day does not mark the transfer of power from one party to another party, but rather the transfer of power from Washington, D.C. to the people of the United States of America. I thought that was profound. Because it's not about these fine distinctions, these differences of opinion. It's about something bigger than that. It's about giving the power back where it should belong to the people, and more importantly, this emphasis, away from centralized power, away from only a few people having the power. Isn't this what Tyndale did when he translated the scriptures into English? Isn't this what the Catholic Church wanted when they had the Bible to themselves and the people were kept ignorant and kept in the dark and only a few people ran your life, a few people you had to depend on to get the word from God, and those people could filter it any way they wanted to because they were your only source? It's called a monopoly. And a monopoly is power put into the hands of a few people. So when Donald Trump said he's going to take power away from a centralized government of a few very powerful people, break that monopoly, if you will, and give it to the people, I think that's exciting. And I see spiritual analogies there, that we have all broken away from some sort of mother church. I could add another word after mother, but I won't. And it became a day of liberation for us. And we no longer had to depend on trained professionals. I was told recently that, in answer to my argument, that yeah, let's give this new president a try because for the first time, we've elected a businessman instead of a politician. And this friend of mine said, that's why he's going to fail, because he's not a politician. Only a politician knows what to do. Scratched my head on that one. Only a politician. What the hell is a politician, really? Somebody who appoints themselves as an expert. Do you go to a politician school? I mean, a politician is somebody who knows how to manipulate people. That's the way I look at it. A businessman knows how to get things done. On the spiritual plane here, we have trained clergymen. Well, you just can't know about God unless you're spoken to by a clergyman, by someone who has a degree in God, someone who knows how to build churches, someone who knows how to basically manipulate the people using the Bible. And so anytime a power structure containing only a few people, or the reins of power are held by only a few people, and they limit the information, that's called propaganda. When they not only limit the information, but they put out misinformation. And when your only source becomes those people, they can make you believe anything they want you to believe. This is the perfect definition of institutional religion. I hate institutional religion as much as I hate institutional politics or institutional medicine, institutional education. You know this. I hate institutional anything. So whenever somebody comes along and says, hey, we're going to take it away from the institution, and I'm just going to be like the middleman, and you guys are going to get your power back, and we're going to take the power of the government down. We're going to dial it down. We're going to dial it back. We're going to give you back a say, and that's always a good thing, okay? That's what I think. That's all I have to say about that. Or, as Forrest Gump would say, that's all I got to say about that. Something like that. Now, I pointed out to you, I wanted to make sure you know this, is that the Lake of Fire is not called the Second Death until human beings are cast there. In verse 10 of Revelation 20, when the adversary is joined in the Lake of Fire with the false prophet and the wild beast, the Lake of Fire is simply called the Lake of Fire and Sulfur, the Lake of Fire and Sulfur. But notice in verse 14, and death and the unseen were cast into the Lake of Fire. This is the second death, the Lake of Fire. It is announced. It is like, this is the second death, the Lake of Fire. It's not called the second death until verse 14. Why is that significant? Because look what happens in verse 14. Anyone not found written in the scroll of life was cast into the lake of fire. What's the lake of fire? It's the second death. And before the end of this week, I'm going to again tell you what death is. This time I'm going to give you details. So simple. And also the word second. As many people think that it's the second death. And it's so different than the first death. It is. It's just more of the same. Second does not make it different. That might be the title of the show when I get there. I'm not there yet. Second doesn't mean different. It's more of the same. And again, I think this is vital to understand. We must be very, very careful here in this whole passage. This is like brain surgery. This is like opening the cranium of the patient and getting the finest scalpel you can and magnifying one little part, because we don't only have the life of a single person in our hands, which the brain surgeon does. We have the life of billions of people in our hands here. That's why we cannot be careless. We must go at this with a scalpel and a very fine pair of tweezers. And I did that with the word judged. I told you how it was judged rather than condemned and how that makes a huge difference to billions of people. Isn't this far more important than operating on the brain of a single patient? Yes, we have billions and billions and billions of patients here. Now, I need to explain this phrase to you before I go on. It's very curious, but it's very comforting. Why does it say, after in verse 13, I'll get the context for you, and the sea gives up the dead in it, and death and the unseen give up the dead in them. For one thing, why are death and the unseen spoken of as separate things? What do they mean? Well, death is thanatos. In the Greek, it's the absence of life. It's the state of being dead. It's the thing. It's the thing itself that makes you dead. It's personified here as if it's a thing. The unseen is, in the Greek, Hades. It means unseen. Those who are dead cannot be found. They're not somewhere. So this supports the truth about death, that it is not life and that it is non-existence. The Hebrew equivalent of Hades is Sheol, and it means asked for, like, well, where are they? What happened to the dead? Where did they go? Jesus said that Capernaum would subside in the unseen, which means, where's Capernaum? It's like Scooby-Doo. Ruh-ro, I don't find Capernaum. Ruh-ro. It's unseen. That's right, Scooby-Doo. It's unseen. And so the dead are also unseen. They don't exist. So you won't find dead people wandering around. Sorry, all you fans of zombie movies. I don't get it. I do not get the zombie movie. Why glorify death? Who wants to see half-dead people? Apparently, lots of people do. Good luck. Have fun with that. I hate death. The day I see the dead walking around, I don't want flesh hanging from them. I don't want to see some halfway house. I want either or. You see how I hate this gray area? Oh, they're dead and alive at the same time. Bullcrap. Only figuratively can one be dead and alive at the same time. Then apparently these freaks are literally dead and alive at the same time. Okay, I'm done talking about fiction now. Let's get back to fact. The unseen is just that, and it's one of the results of being dead. Death is a return, basically, of the, I don't want to say three parts, because there's only two parts to the human body and one result of the two parts. This is just a brief teaching on death here. And when I say brief, I do mean brief. I think I can do this in 30 seconds. Start your watches. We consist of body and spirit. Spirit is the breath of life. God blows into us. It's as simple as that for God. And the body is this physical thing that we have. When the spirit meets the body, it produces a soul. Soul is not a thing. You can't have a soulectomy. You can't remove the soul. It's the result. It's of the body and the spirit being joined. And it is, my time's running out, isn't it? Crap. I'm putting pressure on myself and I'm getting nervous. Can I have a 15-second extension? Yes? Okay, great. It's your sensations. It's your feelings. It's the result of the spirit, which is a real thing, and the body, which is this physical constitution. That's the result. So at death, the spirit returns to God. He withdraws it. And when that happens, the body goes limp because there's no more animation. And the soul, that is your sensations, your feelings, your sight, your sound, your hearing, all the five senses, they disappear into a puff of non-existence, unseen. All right. And I guess the reason I'm guessing here, I'll admit when I'm guessing, I guess the reason this is mentioned is to give further evidence that not just death, not just non-being is here, but that which can't be seen, that was impossible to be seen, is now visible standing at the great white throne. Kind of tricky. The unseen give up the dead in them. See, them, that's a figure of speech. The unseen isn't a them. They're not people. Death and the unseen. This is all a figure of speech, but the elements here are literal. The death is literal. That you can't see anything. What is it? What happened? Where is it? I don't see anything. That's literal. But that they gave something up, that they sat there and thought about it and said, we're going to give up everything we have. We're going to give up, I'm going to give up, the unseen says. I'm going to give up things being unseen, and I'm going to produce them so that they are now visible. And death does not say, in the voice of Scooby-Doo, I'm going to deliver up everybody in me. No, it's not. They're not people, but they're personified here, and they're giving up. It's pictorial. It's picturesque for us to understand that everyone who has ever died is here. There's no more unseen, there's no more death. And that plays looms large here in this next statement, which is very mysterious. And death, and then each were judged in accord with their acts, and death and the unseen were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. How can death be cast into the second death? Again, this is figurative language. It's very difficult. Few people attempt an explanation of this. I am one of the rare people who dares to venture into these waters. And this is how I see it. Death and the unseen, the very things that produced the people who are standing at the great white throne, are themselves said to be cast in the lake of fire and the second death. The dead, the small, and the great have stood, right? How have they stood? Death and the unseen produced them. So now death and the unseen are themselves said to be going into the lake of fire. This means there is no more death. There is the only death there is, which is death at this point, is going into the second death. And so death is being relegated. Death is being contained in the lake of fire. So nobody can say that outside of the lake of fire, there's some other realm of death. There's other people dying somewhere. No, it's just everything that was ever dead and everything that will be dead from now to the end of the fifth eon until the consummation when death is abolished, it's all contained in the lake of fire. Isn't it great when you contain your enemy? It's like, what does an army want to do when they want to surround their enemy and they want to contain them? They want to box them in. This is what the nations try to do against Israel at the end of this eon, the battle, so-called, of Armageddon. They surround the city. It's also what those idiots in Gog and Magog try to do when they surround the citadel of the saints at the end of the fourth eon. because it's the containment thing. And when doctors today fight cancer, they want to contain it. They want to bring it down to a place where they can see what it is, and they know that it's not existing anywhere else. We've got it located now, and then it's much easier to crunch it down, kill it, crush it, because it's been corralled into a small area. Corralled. There's another great analogy. What farmer wants his wild horses or his cattle or his sheep wandering all over the place? Instead, he sends his sheepdog after them to round them up and corral them. So death and the unseen are being corralled. The thing itself, death, and the result of it, can't see anything, everybody's gone, all the dead, where are they, where? This is being, you see what I'm saying? This is being corralled, like by a sheepdog or by a cattle prod, and being now segregated and contained and localized in the lake of fire. That's why I said when I began this, oh, this is the best I can do to explain this now. I mean, do I have all the nuances ironed out? No. Is this a difficult passage? Dang right, it's a difficult passage. And do I want to know about this simply to be a smarter person, simply so that I have more brain power? No. I want to know this to give me some sort of practical benefit. And here's the practical benefit, is that there's no other death in existence except what's in the lake of fire. That's what I take out of this. All right, now, if I get new light on this, as I'm working through the second death, I will tell you. That's the best I have on this for now, because it's so strange. Death and the unseen were cast into the lake of fire. And again, you can't cast a concept anywhere. I mean, you can't cast. How is invisibility cast? This is only the invisibility that is related to death. And again, it also, the fact that the unseen is paired here with death, it also, again, forwards the truth that death is non-existence and that the dead are not anywhere. And folks, I know maybe some of this will be a shock to you as I start teaching on the second death, that you think death is life still, some of you, and you think that human beings go on and they are still seen somewhere, they are still visible in the heavens after they die. But no, it is not true. Death is non-existence. Death is the absence of life. And when we're done with this study on the second death, which will no doubt lead me to discuss the first death also, which is more of the same, you will be comforted. If you are now shocked that death is the absence of life and that dead people cannot be seen anywhere, please hang in there with me. Don't go away, because this is ultimately, while death is an enemy, this is ultimately merely setting the stage for the most monumental resurrection from the dead, even greater than the Great White Throne resurrection, than you have ever seen.